Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling, married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say.
About family,
women,
philosophy,
politics,
history,
people,
money,
pop culture,
kids,
fighting,
business,
life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour we rage against the ragers. Tell race baiters to grow a pair and mock the media members that missed up.
This is Jones and Mike.
Jones, it's good to see you. I hope you had a great day of rage.
Actually, the day of rage is a little underwhelming, I have to say.
Really? You were expecting it to be more ragey?
I was expecting it to be more ragey, and I was a little disappointed.
Really? You do love a good protest.
Well, I do, and I was up at... I spent the earlier part of my day of rage up at Wrigley Field watching the Cubs, and I thought, you know, if I get out of here at the right time, I think I'm going to race down and check out the day of rage.
Sure. Pass the day of rage on your way to one of the houses of privilege
right. In
the city of Chicago, Wrigley Field.
And, you know, but as the day wore on, it was raining, and I just had a feeling like, this is going to affect the rage. And that's why I started I texted you as you were leaving the city, like, how's the Days of Rage?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there
anything
going on with the Days of Rage?
Yeah.
And I started texting other people because I guess there was just this instinct in me that it wasn't going to be that rageful, because I really started reaching out to people to see if the events were going on, because there was just a part of me like, it's raining too much to have any rage.
No, that affects the rage. The rain affects the rage.
It shouldn't, but it just told, there was a gut instinct where I'm like, this rageful crowd will be very affected by the rain.
You know, that's so weird, dude, because yesterday I made a joke that I'm having a day of Page, and I was listening to a lot of Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page, and the one thing I put online was the rain song. So I wonder if, like, I was on that vibration, like, kind of wavelength.
It sounds close.
That's weird.
Sound relatable.
That's bizarre. And so the first clue that it wasn't going to be all that ragey against the machiney was that they were scheduling the day of rage. I don't think you can schedule the day of rage.
And that's what I told a lot of people. A lot of people at work were getting a little freaked out about it, and messages started going out. And actually, the night before, I was playing in a hockey game, and I played with this one guy who's a cop. And he was like, man, I'm telling you, this is going to get bad soon. Some of these rage events. And I was thinking in the back of my mind, like, yeah, but if you're planning it, if you're like, okay, it's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
6 o'clock tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Everyone rage.
Yeah, right.
I was just like, no, I think those
We're not raging at 3.
Yes.
We are not raging at 9. The rage begins at 6
I think
sharp.
Rage just happens.
That's right.
I don't think you're like, I'm going to work my way up. First, I'm going to have lunch. Then after lunch, I'm going to go on the elliptical. Then after the elliptical, I'm going to shower. Then after I shower, I'm going to get dressed. And then I'm going to rage.
Yeah, you're a big list maker from days back.
Yes.
You would never put number 7 on your daily list of things to do, rage.
No, that happens or it doesn't.
I think that's one of the reasons why New Year's Eve sucks, because everyone tries to schedule euphoria.
Yes,
for one
and you
night.
Can't do it.
No, and then they're like, oh, you can't schedule that.
No.
I forgot.
No.
I always forget.
Rage and euphoria, it's like closely related.
Right. And they say that, like, to keep a happy marriage, you should try to schedule sex. And I've never tried to do that. There's something, like, anathema to me about having to do that. Like, I don't want to, like, lower myself to that level.
You
honestly.
Know what, though? I know couples that do that.
Hmm.
And I think that on both sides, they kind of appreciate that they're saying to the other side, like, okay, this is your time. And I do think, I get a sense when I hear them talk about it, that they do enjoy that part of the week. And it's not even really, actually, it seems like it's even about the sex. It's just like, it's wired in that it's your time and my time.
It's so like it should be an orgasmic organic thing.
I know.
It should be spur of the moment.
But
and
I think
there is a tell in every household. There is a tell. And even Flight of the Conchords, they even integrated into their song Business Time.
I know, yes.
Like, you know it is business time when I am brushing my teeth. When you're brushing your teeth before bed, now lots of people brush their teeth before bed.
I
happen to brush my teeth many times per day, but not always before bed, oddly.
Huh.
But if I have a feeling that there's going to be sweet, sweet lovemaking.
It's business time?
When I think, the socks are coming off and it's business time. I do brush my teeth. And I do believe that if I see my old lady brushing her. Now, she's a bedtime toothbrusher from way back anyway.
Yeah. Who takes the socks off, you or her?
Well, it depends. If she takes my socks off or I take her socks off, that's it. It's on.
Yeah.
It's on. That's a seductive move.
Yes.
Very, very sexy to take someone's socks off.
As I'm looking at your, stretched out tube socks. Very sexy.
I know. We're like the heel is like halfway up my calf.
I know.
It's like, I'll take them off. I don't want you to see that the heel's way halfway up the calf.
The toes are all twisted.
Right. So, there are certain things in life that I do believe you can schedule. We are big fans in this house of scheduling births. We love scheduling births. But you can't schedule a protest. You just can't.
No.
And then call it rage on top of it.
No, absolutely.
So I do believe that the Black Lives Matter program, if you will, that group, they need help. They need you. Last week, you were like, look, don't
I
come down here with
help.
Your piss poor mantra, your chants and stuff. You need to have a better one this time. You need to have a plan. You try to talk sense into these people.
They wouldn't listen.
So how does it go down? Do they reschedule something like that? I mean, if you can schedule it once, when is the rainout date for the Day of Rage?
Yeah, no, I don't think there will be one. I just think that's the other thing. Here's the other thing that I was telling people when everyone was kind of like, oh, Days of Rage. You know, if you don't go into the city on a regular basis, I don't think people realize, especially I work one block from City Hall. There are protests every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it all falls just into this soup of angry words that doesn't really stand out. One event doesn't stand out from the other. Like, oh, we want quality footwear. When do we want it? No. And it just drags on. So, you know, it wasn't to have it at 6 o'clock when no one was going to be down there. You're trying to schedule it in. It doesn't seem very organic. It doesn't seem powerful. But even to have a powerful protest, and you got to really do something that stands out. You really have to listen to my plan of mm-hmm. making a request on people where now the media could react to it. Because when you're not doing something like that where it lasts after the protest, it pretty much just dies at the protest.
I got to be honest. When I heard that they were scheduling it at 6, I was like, wow, 6 o'clock on a Friday? Very responsible of you, Black Lives Matter. Letting people go to work and then come home safely before you begin, you know, tearing the place up. And maybe this is even an indicator that, you know, you're more responsible than people give you credit for. You guys all have day jobs. I can't get to a protest until at least 6 o'clock. We need to schedule our Day of Rage at 6 o'clock.
Yes, but see, I think, and that's what made the Weather Underground back in the 60s more successful was mm-hmm. no jobs.
That's right.
They raged at any time.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you lack that,
yeah,
I think your protests lack power.
I think
effectiveness.
Another thing that was postulated on last week's Jones and Mike must hear, as it has once been opined in this town, miss a little, miss a lot. It was postulated that the Black Lives Matter movement is completely fabricated and organized by some nefarious forces, and it's not really designed to get anything actionable done. It's there as more like kind of theater, a show to distract and to appease certain populations and scare others and keep us all kind of divided anyway. It's not really real. And I think the fact that they're able to cancel a protest because of a little bit of rain illustrates that.
Yeah.
Like, we're really not that pissed off. We're just, you know, our union told us to come out here. So, you know, we're not coming. We're not going. No one wants to get wet over this thing.
Right.
We don't feel that strongly about it. Now, that's not to say that the media is not doing a good job of continuing the drumbeat. Did you see the article about It was in the Chicago Tribune and in their local affiliate, the Naperville Sun. Wait, is the Naperville Sun and the Chicago Tribune related now? No, I don't believe that is the case, actually.
No.
The Naperville Sun ran it. The Chicago Tribune republished it. I don't know how that works. Maybe they do have a content sharing program. Regardless, it was all about a blog post by a guy named Brian Crooks here in Naperville, White Bread Suburbia, USA. Once again, like, voted like the best place in the world. Did you see that recently?
No, I didn't. But I always know you guys are like top of the list, like best place to raise a family.
Yeah, it was like recently voted like best Midwest city, whatever. I know the people in Naperville, they love it. I know people that love to hate Naperville, love to hate on those articles. And I just kind of go, eh, whatever. But at any rate, Naperville is a nice place. It's a nice place to raise a family. And this black dude is apparently gaining some notoriety for relating his experiences growing up here and how it was hard to be a black kid in Naperville. And so now it's been published, you know, in media sources. But before that, it was kind of making the rounds online and whatever. And so I finally sat down and read this article from Brian Crooks. Terrible. It's a hard name for anyone. Very hard name to be. The only black kid in the white town named Crooks, I got to imagine. But he goes on this laundry list of grievances about my town. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. Am I angry?
Yes.
Am I angry at him?
Yes. Did it insult you in any way?
No, I think it's very telling. I think it's very telling about the Black Lives Matter movement and how I think it's all a sham and a farce anyway.
Okay. Okay, interesting.
And maybe even telling about this generation of millennials that we love to decry, or many people love to decry. You, of course, are the great defender and lover of millennials.
I am, but I'm guessing that you think this young Crooks man is a wimp.
That's right. More on this next, Jones and Mike.
I've been very happy with the fish oil that I've received. I trust that it's PCB, mercury-free, it's clean, it's wild caught, and it's the best stuff that I found.
Chris is just one of thousands of satisfied Pacific Rim customers around the world and here in Chicago. You need omega-3s daily, but most of us here in Chicago do not get nearly enough of them from our diet. Even worse, if you're like me, you eat too much beef, and that drives up your omega-6s. Those are the omegas that lead to inflammation in your joints and in your arteries. As I like to say, omega-3s counteract the beef sandwiches. They lower cholesterol, reduce inflammation, joint and back pain, boost brain function and eyesight, improve circulation and performance, open your lungs, and give you a healthier heart. Why are you not getting all of these benefits from Pacific Rim Omegas? Try Pacific Rim for free. Just pay the shipping. This is an exclusive offer just for listeners of this radio station. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com and get your free trial of Pacific Rim. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones, Brian Crooks moved to Naperville when he was in the fifth grade. His parents are still here. They have to be loving life right around now because he wrote a blog post that's been now republished in the Chicago Tribune and other papers around the area. And apparently this blog post went viral. Although the media likes to say, like, it's got 100,000 hits, it's viral. It's like, oh, I don't know about that's viral.
I know. That's just such a little catch-all term when something's gone viral. I've said that before. What does that really mean?
Right.
But somehow it gives some level of mythical weight to whatever you're talking about.
Like, that's right.
It went viral.
Right. We shared this on Facebook.com/JonesandMike if you want to read it. Apparently, this blog post is so long that they only republished the excerpts. And the excerpts are amazingly, tediously long. Like, this article, I had to end up skimming it because
it's wordy.
It's like, the first time I was acutely aware of my blackness, I was probably 6 or 7 years old. Like, before then, obviously, I knew I was black, but I hadn't really put it in my face like this. I never had it really put in my face like this until I was like 6 or 7. He talks about how he went on a field trip to a water park and some kid went up to him and, like, again, 6 or 7, and is like, "You're here? I didn't think black people could swim." And that's how the story of Brian Crooks begins. his journey through racism. And I'd like to say that it gets worse, but it kind of never does. It's kind of like offhanded comments, people wanting to touch his hair. I guess that's a thing where, like, white people are like, can I touch you? I've never once felt the compulsion to, like, can I touch your hair?
I never got the whole touching anybody. For example, when women are pregnant, like, can I touch your belly?
Oh, that's so rude.
Or if people just reach out and want to touch and rub someone's belly. It's like, that is their body. Like, what is wrong with, like, why do you feel, you would never, I would never, if I was, when I was up at the bars yesterday in Wrigley, I never thought, like, oh, attractive 24-year-old girl with a flat stomach. I'm just going to go up and rub her belly. And then all of a sudden, if she was a 24-year-old woman that was pregnant, that I could go, I'm just going to pat her belly and say congratulations.
Yeah.
But even
yeah.
pregnant women even report that strangers feel comfortable enough to do that. So yeah, I never got that or the hair thing.
Yeah, and we have a friend
who... I don't think it's the worst.
We have a friend who has interracial children, and she has talked extensively about the difference between white hair and black hair and touching it, etc. But I've never felt the compulsion. I felt the compulsion to touch people, but never their hair.
Right.
But be that as it may, apparently, in Naperville, the children at some point in time were obsessed with touching Brian Crix's hair. And so I go, wow, this is where it's going to begin. There's going to be, this story's going to end with burning crosses on the lawn and effigies and this whole horrific thing. Although they did, the editor note, his parents still live here. And apparently their neighbors are constantly touching their heads. This story goes on with this laundry list of odd grievances, pointing out the subtle racism, apparently, that black people feel they undergo all the time. And now I'm not going to say that they don't undergo that, although some of this stuff I call into question. He claims in this article that, like, you know, Black History Month, he had to get up in front of the class every day and, like, read the story of George Washington Carver. And I'm like, really? There is a teacher, that idiotically stupid moron, that would go, Black History Month, only one black kid in the class, get up here and read, Brian. It's your day again. Like,
every
really?
Day. And was it only... No, I didn't read... You read the article. It was it only George Washington Carver? Please tell me they switched it up and, like, came up with...
No.
Medgar Evers or something. It couldn't be being, just...
Well, every day we got to learn about the peanut guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, being the only black kid in the class, I was the designated reader for the entire month, this dude claims. And I do say claims. I don't believe you. When it came time to read from our history books about slavery and the Triangle Trade Route, whatever that is, sounds pretty horrible, I was always the one who was chosen to read. When it came time to read about Jim Crow, it was my turn. George Washington Carver, the peanut, that sounds like a job for Brian. Booker T. Washington, Harriet Tubman.
Oh, they switched it up, though.
Surely Brian is the perfect choice for those passages. I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
I have a hard time.
Nobody in the room, like,
well,
went like, teacher, really? This is really odd that you always have Brian read the black stuff.
I have a hard time believing that as well. However, if that was true.
Even if it was true.
No, if it was true, though, dude, that did, after a while, have to be a downer that 4 out of the 5 days of the week you were reading something about slavery or Jim Crow. That would be uncomfortable to just sit off and just rip off a bunch of Jim Crow laws.
Finally, fine. Look,
that would just be a little weird.
Great. Let's just pretend that all of what he says in this article, it goes on, I got pulled over a lot. Yeah, when I was a teenager, I got pulled over all the time, dude. You know what? I never get pulled over now. It's not to say that I don't ever break the law. I think that I break less laws as a 42-year-old than I did when I was 18. Mm-hmm. But you just get pulled over all the time when you're under 20. All the time.
You know, it's
total probable cause. It's profiling. This is low-hanging fruit. I'm a cop. They give me a quota. I'm going to go out there and pull over every teenager I see. I guarantee that if they're breaking one law, they're breaking three, and now I've got my quota. That's it. It's simple economics, man. My larger point about this article is, if you are inclined to see something, you will always see it. When my father died, everywhere I looked, I saw and heard about the word father. I'd be sitting at a red light, I'd look over at the church, and on the marquee, it said something about father. I'd turn on the radio, and it was, of course, The Living Years, about his father. Like, everything was father, 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 for a couple of weeks. And I was like, wow, that's really, that's uncanny. That's like God speaking to me. It's like, no, it's just on your mind. Your mind is programmed to pick up that word right now. And in a couple of weeks, you'll be thinking about something else, and it won't pick up that word. So when you're inclined to see racism everywhere, you will always find what you're looking for. President Obama this week gave a speech where he talked about, I've had to deal with racism too. Now, this guy was raised by white people. He had a weird childhood, ate like dog in like Indonesia and stuff, was raised part of his life in Kenya, had a like kind of an a-hole father, it sounds like, a black father who was an a-hole, by the way, and the white grandparents ended up taking him to like Hawaii, so probably pretty awesome. But, you know, so a weird life, no question. But I don't necessarily think a particularly challenged life per se, but he this week felt compelled to make a couple of speeches, and in one of them he talked about how I've been the victim of racism too. And he talked about a story where he was like 7 years old in a building with an elevator, and like how some old like neighbor who knew him and was friendly with him like refused to get on the elevator with him. He believes like she was like, no, I'll wait for the next one or something. And that was the first time I was 10 years old. That was the first time I came face to face with racism. It's like, well, or maybe she forgot something in her apartment, dude. Like, what? You're expecting me to believe that an old woman was like, I'm not getting in the elevator with that 10-year-old black boy.
So now,
come on.
So what you're saying is, because I do believe that there is a lot of racism out there, and I know that you believe that as well, and that blacks experience a lot of racism, even in their day-to-day lives.
Uh-huh.
But are you saying that we need to start building up, we need to start manning up a little bit more and not being so touchy or so sensitive, or to think that we're the only ones that are having this experience?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Thank you.
Okay.
Because when I read this Brian Crooks's article, I went, you know what? I would love to read the flip side of this. Who's the white person who was the only white kid at an all-black school? And I want to know if the worst thing they had to deal with was somebody wanting to touch their hair. Because I happen to think it might have been a little rougher for them.
Well,
based on what I've heard from people being, you know, Howard Stern most famously talks about living in Roosevelt, New York. It was horrible. I got beat up every day.
Well,
and I got to think that those people have it a little tougher than a white kid or black kid in Naperville has had it.
I would think so. Obviously, I can't speak from experience. However, I do have a good friend of mine who graduated, went to an all-black high school. And I saw the yearbook myself, flipped through it. It was like her brother, and maybe two or three other white kids. It was an all-black high school, essentially. And, you know, it's funny. She never, ever, for years and years and years, never spoke about her experience, never talked about it at all. And then just one day, I was hanging out at her apartment. She brought out a video where she was in a beauty contest, like a beauty patch, a high school beauty contest. And she was the only white girl that was participating in it.
Uh-huh.
And she just was talking about all of her unique experiences. And then, you know, from time to time, there would be difficulties and people yelling at her that she was a white devil. Or,
a white devil?
Yes. Or if black girls would be very sensitive if any of the guys that they liked were talking to her in the hall. And she's a very attractive girl.
Yeah.
So this would be something that would happen for her regularly.
Oh, yeah.
Which would probably bring about the white devil comments.
Uh-huh.
She even in the beauty contest, I noticed she finished second. She should have won. But, you know, it was one of those things where you could just kind of see that she was facing certain blocks as well. Never really bitter about it, never angry about it. In fact, all of our friends were really surprised when she talked to me about it, because she's like, she never talks about high school at all. She never really addresses it. So I did have to note that difference. Now, speaking to some of the things that they did go through, she did let me know that, for example, she was in high school at the time of Rodney King or anything like that that happened nationally.
Uh-huh.
And this was up in Benton Harbor, Michigan. So at the time that she was going to high school, it was one of Benton Harbor, St. Joe's. St. Joe's is a predominantly white, wealthy area.
Yeah.
Benton Harbor is more black, lower income.
Yeah.
So anytime that there would be any kind of racial strife or a national news story like Rodney King, she and her brother and the other white kids would be removed from school.
Really?
Yes. To alleviate any kind of tension or them being
targets.
Because
there was a fear for their safety?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Case closed.
Yes, it does.
Brian Crooks had it so badly. During Black History Month, he claims he had to read about George Washington Carver. In Benton Harbor, when there was a white-black story in the national news, the white kids had to be taken out of school or else they'd get killed.
Well,
little different, Brian.
Roughed up, to say the least.
Yeah, okay, fine.
However, Benton Harbor, at the time she was going to school, was also on and off years would be the most violent small town in America. So it wasn't as though it was this easy existence for her.
Yeah, well, and so, but that, again, that's my larger point is, you know, it's tough all over, man. It's tough to be the only Italian kid in the, you know, Irish neighborhood. It's tough to be the Irish kid in the black neighborhood. It's tough to be the black kid in the white neighborhood, on and on and on. Maybe segregation works, actually. Like soft segregation, where like neighborhoods were,
they're just,
you know,
comfortable. People are comfortable, yeah, being around their own.
That's right. Maybe that's not such a bad thing, actually.
Well, I don't even know that it needs to be debated as a good or bad thing. I think it's human nature. It's human instinct. And almost, if there is a bad thing, to try to fight something that isn't on its own awful, I don't think that that's necessarily a horrible thing. If people come over, as my parents came over from Ireland, they liked being in this Irish community.
Mm-hmm.
If they liked it that way, I don't necessarily see that as a problem. I obviously, and I know you're not advocating having intentional segregation.
Right.
But at the same point, if it's something that just even happens to happen, come about instinctually among, yeah, people, I don't know that we necessarily need to freak out about that.
No, my last neighborhood turned totally Indian. Like Indian, not Native American Indian. I might have dug them Native American Indians. We could have drank whiskey together. But the Indians, they didn't dig us. And they didn't seem to dig each other either. It was like a silent neighborhood. Like caste system silent, like people didn't make eye contact, they didn't talk to each other.
That's a hard one to navigate. The Indian caste system,
yeah,
is that's hard.
That was my feeling.
I can't wrap my mind around that.
And I'm projecting that that was the case because they didn't talk to us. But maybe it was like, we're not talking to you, white devil. But I don't know. All I knew is it was all the whiteys moved, it was all Indians, and it just, you know, there wasn't a very warm feeling. And so we moved. And we didn't go like, we can't move into an Indian neighborhood, but we tried to find another neighborhood that seemed a little bit different. And this one is the one where we settled in. We like it. And it's in Naperville, which I am now told is a completely racist place. Although my only experience with that is being in the Indian neighborhood kind of sucked. So, you know, I just think that it doesn't really matter where you're at. If you're the different one, if you're the, you know, green goldfish, the other goldfish are going to kind of be leery of you. And I don't think that that's bad. Although you said something interesting,
I
want to dovetail back to. Okay, you don't think
it's... I do think that's bad. I think that is a flaw among
people. Well, okay, let me rephrase.
Please.
Let me rephrase. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's a good thing to expect that there has to be total assimilation. I think that there is a virtue to having Mexican enclaves and Puerto Rican enclaves and Italian neighborhoods, and there's a charm to that.
Yes,
you go to those neighborhoods and you kind of soak in their culture, and you go there, and then you go back to your little land. And again, everyone can coexist, but it's kind of like the ride. It's a small world.
Yes, and it's in, you know, what I've even noticed in Chicago, more than really any other neighborhood, I do like what you're describing, where there can be a Chinese neighborhood, a Mexican neighborhood. You can go into those neighborhoods and kind of tap into that cultural feeling.
Yeah.
Up in Lincoln Square, which is always a very strong German enclave, that's really, really changed in the last few years. And it bums me out when I go there now. So it's not even something that's unique among the races, but just even among, like, even white people. I would love to see if Lincoln Square really, they're trying to hang on to that German identity, but you can really see that it's slipping away. And I that's one thing that I always loved about that area.
Dovetailing back to your friend, the hot girl in the black school, you said she was in second place in the beauty pageant, but she should have won.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because I think what you said was kind of subtly racist. Like, what you're saying is, I don't care for African-American features as much as I care for the European features. So she's cuter to me. And meanwhile, no, the voting population in that school, they apparently prefer African-American features.
Well, no, when you're talking about, when you're talking about from a perspective of a beauty pageant.
I got you.
No, when you're talking about perspective, there's two things. When you're talking about a beauty pageant, there is that element of beauty, and yes, beauty is subjective. But it's not just, oh, my friend, she was white and she was attractive. This was someone who was offered modeling gigs, modeling contracts.
Great.
You could see the other
contestants. By European preferring people.
You could see the other contestants were not. She wasn't going up against people that looked, I'll just put it out there, plainly, plain speak for y'all.
Yeah.
She wasn't going up against young girls that look like Beyonce or Gabrielle
Union.
No,
and why do they look, okay, I don't even know this Union person, but Beyonce.
Gabrielle Union is Dwayne Wade's wife. And Gabrielle Union would have a more traditional black look to her, if that's where you're going to go, I'm anticipating.
That's what I'm
going to
say, yes. Beyonce looks white. She looks white with an incredible tan.
Okay, well then let's go Gabrielle Union.
Fine.
So she did, she just had
She wasn't going up against Precious girls who look like the girl from Precious. Gabaday Sibaday.
She could have just kept it to Precious. I don't know what you're talking about. No, but she wasn't going up against people. She wasn't going up against girls that would have fit any kind of elite level of beauty among among any race.
Yeah, like, see, it's a slippery slope. It's impossible.
No, she should have won that contest. Look, I saw the videotape.
Yeah.
She should have won that contest.
Fine. Now, and you're also biased towards your friend, but that subtle, like, little racism, and what Brian Crooks in this article is pointing out is you don't even know sometimes that you're being insensitive or whatever. Now, I think that we need to toughen up. I don't think that this generation of Americans living in 2016, I'm not even going to, like, narrow it down to millennials. I don't think the people living in 2016 could live in 1930. For more than 17 minutes, let alone 1900, 1870, 1800, on and on and on. Like, we're soft. We're soft, and we're pansies.
Oh, Mike.
And I, for one, am sorry you had to hear such raw and uncensored language on this show. We need to toughen up, and this Brian Crooks guy needs to toughen up. But, having said that, there is an idiocy amongst us all where we do insensitive, stupid things that probably are kind of racist-y or inappropriate.
Yeah, but you got to fight through. I mean, I remember working at a radio station where one black girl told me that I was pretty cool for a white guy.
That's like the highest compliment she could pay a civilian.
Maybe. And she totally, and I wasn't offended by it. I knew what she was meaning. She really was just trying to tell me that she really thought I was cool.
Yeah, except that, like,
and she, I kind of got a sense that she has not hung out with a lot of white people, so that just stood out to her.
That's amazing. Like, that seems hard to believe that you could do that. Like, I know that, like, when I went to Illinois State, there were people from farm country that had never seen a black guy. So they were, like, in awe that first week of school. There were, like, black dudes around.
Well, and to be fair to this
girl, how does a black person do that?
Well, I think what she was more or less saying was on a peer level. She maybe has had several jobs where she was working for older white manager or older white owner. But this was where we were kind of within 1 to 3 years of each other's age. So that's what I'm guessing. She hasn't had a lot of that experience, interracial peer experience.
So there has to be instances when we're, you know, accidentally racist like that. And there has to be other instances where we're overly sensitive to the brothers and the sisters. And we give them a pass when probably we shouldn't.
I've been one, you know, I had an instance this week where that came up and I wondered about it just right on the floor of my building where I just observed a guy where I thought, you know, is he getting away with something? And it was kind of a not sensitive in the way where I was upset, but I was just like, it appears as though he's getting away with something. I don't think I would get away with it. In fact,
what was he doing
that week? Well,
he was filming women in the washroom.
No. It's I mean, there's no real build up to it. It was just simply over time that he was growing out. He started to grow this small, what looked like a mohawk.
Okay.
And it's a very business professional environment.
And he's a black guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a very business professional environment where he's working, where I work, and everybody has kind of, well, business professional to business casual. Everybody dresses that way on the floor. And I just noticed that during the course of the week, or the course of several weeks, I should say, this mohawk just started growing out and growing out. And I thought for a while, I'm like, when it was a smaller mohawk, I thought like, well, there's some among young 20-something white guys, the haircut's gotten really tight along the sides. It's almost that 20s style is coming back. They must be getting their haircut every 10 days. But I thought, well, maybe that's the black version of that, where when he just had the little stripe at first. But now, over the course of weeks, it's grown into a full-on mohawk.
Hmm.
And I just look at that and I just think to myself, if I tried to do that same thing, I would get called out on that. Mm-hmm. And this has been growing for weeks. In fact, yesterday I took a half day at work, and before I went to the Cubs game, I went into the office and I wore a Cubs shirt and cargo shorts, but in a bag that I could leave at work. I brought business casual appropriate clothes. If someone came into the office, I could have changed.
Uh-huh.
And there was unannounced, or someone forgot to schedule on the meeting, someone did come into the office, and I was told later, like, I would have introduced you, but you weren't dressed appropriately. And there was this whole, like, well, I had the clothes, you didn't let me know you had the meeting going on, blah, 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 blah. And, to get to the end of the story, essentially, I got a light slapping on the wrist for something, and immediately I thought, like, yeah, but I don't have a mohawk.
Jeez.
So I wondered that.
So you're thinking that, okay, well, no one wants to address the elephant in the room, Andre's, mohawk.
Right. But I felt like, oh, that's interesting that they felt comfortable.
Interesting.
To at least slap me on the wrist for wearing a Cubs shirt and cargo shorts.
Dude, being a manager in today's day and age has to be so hard. So hard for that reason. Like, how do you? Because that is like a big thing in the black community, is hairstyles. Like, I love that Brian Crooks was like, everyone wanted to touch my hair. It's like, yeah, your hair is the center of attention many times. Like, nobody knows what to make of it, and we don't know. There's no way to like uniformly like say like, all right, all men must have close cropped hair, nothing below the collar. La la la. You can't put anything in the style guide. For black people.
Yeah, but a mohawk. A mohawk?
Yeah, I think it, yeah. Well, so what he's doing, though, is he's putting a ceiling over his own head. Like, okay, no one's going to ever bust your chops, dude. You can do kind of whatever you want. You wear whatever you want. Everyone's going to be kind of on eggshells around you. But here's the deal. You're not going to be the CEO, probably, if you keep it up. Everyone's got to play the game a little bit. Where I work, you can wear kind of whatever you want. And so, like, these dopey millennials wear, like, T-shirts. And I'm like, yeah, just because you can doesn't mean you should, dude. I got to be honest. I think you're handcuffing yourself. I think you're telling everybody, like, I'm happy working here, but I'm not going to be a manager here. And so, yes, you will get what you receive.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get what you are seeking. Like, you get what you see what you're looking for, you will get what you're seeking. So I think that this cat's kind of hobbling himself.
Intentionally.
And you, on the other hand, I got to be honest, like, what's up with wearing, like, just a T-shirt into the office? Like, what, the boss has to schedule it? Like,
he has to put Fridays. It on
a, now, look,
no, no,
I'm
no,
going to
no,
have
no.
someone
well,
in here.
You.
I need
You're
you guys
telling
to
me
be
you
respectful.
Don't work where I work.
I need you to be respectful.
I will tell you. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
On Fridays, we have a casual Friday. When people do go out and do go to ball games, he's come into the office in a short T-shirt. Not
the boss.
Short T-shirt.
He's the owner.
The owner.
Okay.
He comes in a set of shorts, and he'll come in a button-down shirt, but it'll be like a short-sleeve button-down shirt with the open collar. Like that on Fridays, we have a summer Fridays where you have a half day every other week, but Fridays in general are a dress-down day. So that's why I did that.
And dress down typically.
Otherwise, I come in, I always adhere, even when you made alterations to the dress code, I adhered to the dress code, never deviated from that.
Yeah.
Even when others do, to a degree, I do not.
I think dress down means like, you know, nice jeans, button down shirt that day.
That's what I do.
No blazer, no slacks.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Like you gotta keep it real, bro. You always gotta look the part. Plus, you're an old man.
But I don't look it.
You're no friggin' child anymore.
I don't look it.
You're not like me, where you can just dress like a boy.
You are a boy dresser.
And that's not a virtuous thing. Like, there's no charm in me looking like a child all the time.
And there's no charm in it. I mean, it's your look, but there's no charm in it.
And I got to give you credit. You have told me straight out you should not dress like a boy. And I commend you for that. Sometimes you just got to pull someone aside and tell them
it's straight. Just be straight up.
That's right. More on that next. Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. # Jones and Mike.
Andrew WK is coming to town. You're going to go see him, Jones?
No, I won't be able to.
Isn't it
no, I guess I could.
It's like Revolution Brewing Fest or something.
I know, but when you said you couldn't go, I thought.
Well, it's the same week as my anniversary and the same week as Riot Fest. Like, how much excitement can I possibly take in 1 week?
I know, but I do kind of like this setup. He's playing at Revolution Brewing.
Yeah.
You get like a free piece of pizza and a free beer.
Really?
It's $20. Andrew WK, free slice of pizza and free beer. I thought that's kind of neat.
I love him because he has a uniform. His uniform is dressing like Mr. Goodbar without the hat and with super long hair and a beard.
Yes. No, I like him too. So I thought, well, if you were up for it, then maybe I would be up for it, but...
Now, and clearly that's like his brand at this point. Although at some point, I'm sure another rock star came along and was like, or one of his buddies in the music business, and they're like, hey, man, what's with the white shirt and white pants and black belt? You look like Mr. Friggin' Goodbar. Like, right. What is that, Andrew?
Yeah, you know, that's difficult. That's difficult to go to make the choice of what is your look and to, like, you know, have your identity be out there.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when you push the envelope just a little bit too far, and then it gets awkward, it gets weird. Like, you know, I was at Wrigley this week, and I was in a suite. It was very nice.
Oh, hello. Hoi, hoi, polloi.
And then right next to me.
Although those suites, have they done those over yet? Because they're kind of...
Well, they're still kind of...
It's better than the regular seats, but not by much. Whereas, like, Comiskey's are, like, so much better.
Yeah, no, they haven't really... Well, they haven't really gutted the whole place out and fixed it. You know, they haven't really done that.
But they're going to redo those.
I believe so.
They have to.
I believe so.
Yeah, they're kind of, like, they're kind of crappy.
So the people that were next to me, though... were of kind of that same sweet caliber, whatever corporation they were a part of. And I have to say, like, the dudes that were in, it was all of like a 50-something crowd, I would say. Mm. And all the dudes that were in the box were very jocular. They were probably sales guys. And everything was like, hey, Bob, beer me. You know, it was really that kind of jocular attitude.
Is that a word, jocular? I think you made it up.
I made it up.
Good.
Had a jocular attitude, and it was noticeable, but it was still party in the USA friendly, but at the same time, I think they were kind of pushing the envelope. They were trying to prove it to themselves. Like, we still got it. We still got it.
It's just like back at Phi Kappa Mu, U of I.
But I noticed that the women they were with were kind of that same age, and they were trying to pull off that same thing.
How?
And it was... Well, it was just the way, not necessarily, they were trying to, you know, stay drink for drink kind of thing. They weren't necessarily shouting out, beer me. However, and I hate to be judgy in this way because I do feel it is a little unfair.
You are a talk show host, Jones. If anyone in America can be judgy, you can be judgy. It's in your job description. Who cares if we don't get paid for this? It's in our job description.
It is easier for a man than it is a woman to pull off a more youthful look. And these women, that's what they were trying to do. That was their version of beer me. They had on the shorter crop tops where it was open along, like above the boobs.
Yeah, and no straps. Like it's a big tube.
And, you know, it was just, they spent a little too much time in the sun and the skin wasn't completely firm. Like, and it was just, I was looking at them thinking.
Was it festooning?
Well, I don't even know what that means.
Oh, did you ever hear the limerick? I once knew a woman from Azores.
No.
With green sores, dog snapped at the meat as she walked down the street, then hung in festoons from her drawers.
No, I have never heard that. However, some of these women were perhaps the type that did inspire that limerick. Now, as I looked at them, I thought to myself, is there not... Like, the guys that they were with or their other friends, do they not have someone that would point out it's not age appropriate? The shorts were really short, and their
really?
Legs were fine, but they weren't great. And you just think there are some things that you just have to surrender to youth. And I think women have to do it more so than men. And that's...
Yeah, the beer me thing is really lame-o.
It is lame-o.
Have you caught me doing a beer me thing ever?
I'm sure. Not that I can think of right now.
No way.
Kind of, you can be weird out in
like
public.
Like dorks who like chest bump still. Those are those dudes.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, you don't do anything like that. But just when I saw that, I thought, when and how do you approach another friend of yours where you go, really? You're still wearing X? You're still doing this?
Yeah, and you're my guy for that. You're real good about that.
Well,
yes. A-hole you.
Well, I have pointed out in the past, but I didn't like, hey, you look like, I didn't judge you on it. I just was honest with you. I said, you often dress like a boy.
And you were like, I'll take you shopping. Actually, you and my old lady were like, I'll take you shopping. We're not just going to judge you. We're going to offer you a solution.
Right. And I just looked at these other people in this suite and thought, is there really no one in their lives that said, boy, that's really something that looks cute on your daughter, but not you?
Jill, my old lady always says, like, oh, she'll point someone out like that and go like, oh, she doesn't have any friends. That's so sad.
Well, you know.
But I don't know how a friend brings that up. Like, when we're busting chops, it's easy for
you
to be like, well, right, because you're busting my chops. And you say, like, yeah, you dress like a 7-year-old boy still. And I, you know, but it's kind of like, I know you're serious, but we're joking around, but I can read into it. But,
yes.
Like, how does a woman do that?
But I have, even when you say that with me, though, I gave you examples. We did actually talk through that. I just, in the same way, maybe unrelated to clothing, but even when this week, when the story broke about Mick Jagger, he's soon to be a father at 72 years of age.
For the 8th time. Yeah.
And I, as soon as I saw that, you know right away it's a younger woman, and I've seen him in interviews.
It's amazing he can still get satisfaction at all, let alone satisfaction that results in a fetus.
Yeah, but I'm sure he can pay for medical science to help him along that way. But when I saw that he was going to become a father, and you knew there was going to be a younger woman was involved, I've seen him in interviews where he was asked outright, would you ever date a woman your own age? And he was like, I don't see that happening. And he was honest about it. But when I saw the woman, his girlfriend, is 29 years old.
Yeah, now, baby.
I know that in the annals of masculinity, the reaction should be, that's awesome, dude.
No.
Of course.
I barely would be able to talk to a 29-year-old. I don't know what that geezer is talking to a 29-year-old about.
Now, I don't mind if
well, yeah, you love them.
Yeah, from like, if someone's in their early 40s and they are in a relationship or they hang out with people in their late 20s, I can see that. I don't have this big issue with people of varying ages. That's not, I do say that at some point there's a limit.
I dress like a boy and you think and talk like a boy.
Okay.
So that's how we,
that may be fair.
That's how we get along.
But I just thought to myself, even when I saw with Mick Jagger, and you know, you're saying, well, how do you go about pointing out to these women at Wrigley, like, hey, that's really something that's more for your daughter and not you. I thought to myself when this Mick Jagger story broke, man, wouldn't it be weird if one day when I'm 72 and Mike's 72, drive out to hang out to his house and, you know, we've
lived... Still doing this show.
We've lived our lives, very successful lives.
Yeah,
His
amazing.
Children are all out of the house.
Oh, God,
just a couple years ago, Jill passed away.
Oh.
And he's on his own. So every Saturday, I swing out and we watch a ball game and have
nice.
A beer.
Thanks.
And to be out there hanging out these two 72-year-olds, and Mike has met someone new, and she hangs out, and I know that Jill would want Mike to be happy.
I'm telling you all about Cindy.
Around the corner
comes
Cindy.
But I leave out one detail.
And she's 29 years old.
Yeah, baby.
And now I am sitting there trying to hang out with my high school, my 72-year-old high school buddy.
Yeah.
And someone who is 43 years.
That's right.
His junior.
Now, Jones, I got to tell you about Cindy. She tastes like a peach.
Now, but shouldn't I? And I know you're
and
talking
you're
like,
about
her
chap. How does a 72-year-old
taste
like a peach?
I know you're talking about her chapstick.
Yeah.
But how I would have... Would, do
oh,
they have to say something?
That's how she tastes like a peach. She's 28.
Don't I have to say something?
Yeah, and how would you broach that subject? And that's the conundrum. As you're describing something that as we get older, we should be having more heart-to-hearts, like, hey, age appropriateness, blah, 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 blah. But I believe that in direct disproportion with that theory is our age precludes us from having those conversations. As we get older, we lose that ballsiness to bring things like that up.
I thought that my understanding is as you get older, you kind of don't care. And it's like, I got something to say. You two shouldn't be living in sin. You're going to the devil.
Yeah.
I always kind of thought, like, you hang out with too many homosexuals. I thought that happens when you're older. You got a thought, boom. You put it out there. And... You know, it's not my job.
It should be that way, but I don't think it works out that way.
It's not my job to lean, for example, at Wrigley Field. It wasn't my job to lean across the suite and go, ladies, you know, maybe you should wear something a little bit longer.
That's where you need someone like me who comes in. Like, maybe that's my job. I'm the one who breaks bad news, but I don't just tell you outright. I, like, make fun of you. Like, I would come in and be like, wow, look at those outfits. You guys raided your kid's closet today. Or I would, like, insult them in some way.
Yes, you would absolutely do that.
And then they'd go like, F you, who's this jerk? Kick him out of our suite.
And, you know.
But they'd get the hint.
And here's the thing. You do that. And 9 out of 10 times, it fails for you. But that may be a way of looking to bring out a certain purpose to it.
No, there is a purpose to it. I am trying to tell them something. Yeah. And I'm hoping to solicit a laugh from the people who hear it.
So, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I've never
I'm not trying to bang the person who has skin festooning over her tube top. I'm trying to let her know, like, no, you look ridiculous. And someone needed to tell you. But apparently, you know, Frank, the frat boy over there, the frat boy, like, middle manager over there, can't muster up the strength to tell you.
Now, here's the other side of this, though. If you're Frank the frat boy and all his friends who are all about beering each other, do you want to still believe that the woman that you're with is the woman that she was when she was 19 or 20 or 21? That you wouldn't say something either. Like, wouldn't... I would think, if I'm projecting into a marriage, that when you show up to a place, I think, of course, you want the woman that you're with to look good. And if there is some constructive criticism that you can add to make her look good, that will help her, but then also help you, right? Because you're putting on a good face, you're making a good appearance, and anyone can say whatever they want. People like when they make a good appearance. I would think if you're this Frank the Tank kind of guy, wouldn't you think to yourself, okay, that's not age appropriate. She did raid our daughter's closet, but I still want her to look good because I want to show off to my guys like I picked the right one. Like, wouldn't you think that they would help her along? Clearly,
yeah,
they don't.
Yeah, I think
clearly
you make suggestions. Like, here, put this Mark Grace jersey over your shoulder so you don't get sunburn, or you come up with some, well, we're in a suite. That's okay. Or yeah, I think you make suggestions. So, like, my old lady recently has taken to quoting the line from Airplane. The movie Airplane, when they go, and Leon's getting larger. Oh. Like, she calls me Leon, right? So she's trying to tell me I'm fat, right? And I'm like, all right, interesting. Fabulous. Like, so I kind of laughed at first. Now I'm kind of like, you know what? Stop effing calling me Leon, dude. Not cool. So, like, people in these marriages, we have our ways of telling the person, like, hey, man. It's going to start with a joke, but I'm going to tell that joke a lot until you get the point.
So why would you think that these guys, we're projecting, yeah. But I can only assume that these guys have not had the Leon's getting larger conversation with their wives based on the way they're dressing. Now, they're not getting larger, but they're dressing inappropriately. They clearly have not had the equivalent of that conversation. Is it because they don't want to face that they have to have that conversation with their woman? And in a way, if that's true, then it's almost kind of odd that I'd almost have to give them, those Frank the Tank types, a lot of credit.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit of both. I think you again, just like the racism, you see what you want to see. If you're programmed to like want to like hear people calling you fat everywhere, you're going to hear people calling you fat everywhere. If you want to see racism everywhere, like this week, I've only had 3 people be kind of jags to me. They were all black. In a place that doesn't have any black people. So the only black people in this building were all kind of jerks to me this week. And I did kind of take note, like, huh, that sucked, what you just said to me. But whatever. I'm just grabbing my pork belly and I'm moving on. Right. So out of the cafeteria. So, you know, I just keep on trucking. But I did notice, like, oh, well, y'all are getting a little big for your britches this week. Like, what is that? And so same thing like that. Frank the Tank and his types, like, they still see their old lady as the beauty queen who finished second once. And they love it. Or you just don't. I don't know how a dude like broaches that subject with his old lady. That's all.
Well, your old lady seemed to find a way to broach it with you.
Yeah, and again, I think you can say it to certain types of people or whatever, and you start it off with a joke, and then you just keep telling that same joke until, you know, someone finally, you know, like a dunce like me finally gets the hint. Oh, you really are calling me fat. Oh, interesting.
So when you have a girlfriend that's 43 years your junior,
ooh,
will you be comfortable
if
I address this with you?
I think you got to let a 72-year-old, like, just have fun. Like, how many years do you have left, right?
Yeah, it's just...
Jesus Christ. Yes, you know, I hope you would just bite your tongue and try to, like, you know, just try to oogle her fabulous inner thighs.
Okay, now you're taking it too far.
People and their dress. Now, this seems to be a theme. We'll talk about this more next. It's Jones and Mike.
I've been very happy with the fish oil that I've received. I trust that it's PCB, mercury-free, it's clean, it's wild-caught, and it's the best stuff that I found.
Chris is just one of thousands of satisfied Pacific Rim customers around the world and here in Chicago. You need omega-3s daily, but most of us here in Chicago do not get nearly enough of them from our diet. Even worse, if you're like me, you eat too much beef, and that drives up your omega-6s. Those are the omegas that lead to inflammation in your joints and in your arteries. As I like to say, omega-3s counteract the beef sandwiches. They lower cholesterol, reduce inflammation, joint and back pain, boost brain brain function and eyesight, improve circulation and performance, open your lungs, and give you a healthier heart. Why are you not getting all of these benefits from Pacific Rim Omegas? Try Pacific Rim for free. Just pay the shipping. This is an exclusive offer just for listeners of this radio station. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com and get your free trial of Pacific Rim. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
You know who needs to police his employees and the way they dress is whoever is running Channel 5 in Chicago, the news, the local news. Like, the chicks who do the weather, they're busting out of their dresses. And it's distracting. Like, I don't even know what the high is ever. I don't even know what the chance of rain is. I don't know if the barometer is rising or falling. All I know is that I know what's rising in my house when the weather is on. And it's not the barometer.
And that's really dicey, because if you notice that, that can get you into trouble as well. What was that, Ayani Crystal? The sports reporter on Chicago...
Yeah.
Comcast Sportsnet.
Yeah.
A very gifted young woman.
That's right.
And
very,
we learned that if you simply note that publicly... Uh-huh. You kind of get your butt cheeks.
That's right, Dan
that.
Bernstein from The Score. He tweeted at the mention of her name. He just tweeted boobs.
Yeah,
and he got like suspended and stuff. It's like, well,
and then he apologized. I wouldn't have apologized.
Well, tell me about her sports acumen. Tell me why she got the job. Did she get the job because of her breasts or because of her sports acumen? My old lady hates sportscasters, women sportscasters.
I know. I don't get that. That's weird.
Well, because most of the time, because her claim is that they just got hired for their body. Not for what they know about sports, and in most cases, I'd have to agree.
I don't know. Well, that's another topic, and, you know, for me, I don't want to sit there, and you know me, I very rarely have a strong use for the news.
No.
Except one of my absolute favorite things, news bloopers.
That is the one thing, that is the one gift that keeps giving to you.
It is the best. I love it. And just this week was really heavy on news. And just as I was going through all of this, and then all of a sudden, I don't know why, it just turned over in my head. I was like, I just need a cleanse. I need a news bloopers. And anyone who knows me knows how much I love them. And even my sister has pointed out, like, I can tell when you are watching news bloopers because you get a particular, there's a laugh. You have an exact laugh where I go, I know. And I'll be in the same house with her, and then all of a sudden I'll get this dopey little laugh. She goes, I know what you're watching. I know what you're watching. And
really?
She's right. It's news bloopers.
What is it, like a high-pitched laugh? Can you imitate the news blooper laugh?
I don't
laugh?
Know. It's almost like a little... Like
all right. Let me try to get it out of you. Let me play some news bloopers and hopefully isolate this laugh so that we can all... recognize the Jones laugh.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, hold on. Look at this. This is FailTube TV. Top 30 funniest news bloopers ever. There's a guy, there's a car sinking. Oh, jeez. The car was parked on ice.
Oh, I love this stuff.
Yeah, they send these meteorologists out to, like,
I've seen this one. This one's
zones.
Good.
Yeah. Dad, that's the laugh.
Rob Ford.
That's the laugh.
That's Toronto. That's Rob Ford, though.
Rob Ford just died.
I know. Dude, can you go back and see if you can play the audio just to hear him? Because I've seen that one before.
The one with the car on the ice?
No, the Rob Ford. Because you hear him complain at the end.
Okay.
It's great.
Okay, here we go. Rob Ford, former mayor of Toronto, who's now dead, who was made famous by, like, smoking crack, getting caught smoking crack while he was still the mayor, just like Marion Barry.
Yeah, he didn't make the best choices.
No, he sure didn't. Here we go.
Excuse me, guys.
All right. We got the Jones laugh now.
That's it.
Isolated. You do love it.
And that was never.
Jesus Christ! It's a bunch of dudes sitting around,
you know,
throwing
is.
Water on each other, fighting, literally fighting on the set. Look at.
I know.
They're like a bunch of Arabs fighting.
I love it. I love. Dude, there is something about, because newscasts are supposed to be perfect 24/7, and we cut to so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. And whenever it doesn't work, whenever it doesn't come off, I can be in the car and I can listen to a mistake that's happening on music radio. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, there's just something that I love about it. I love when the machine is not so perfect. I love when it's not so clean. Have you ever seen the woman? Did you ever see the news clip? It's kind of a famous one where there's the woman that's at some like county fair, and they're like, "Come out this Saturday. We even have a grape crushing contest because there's like a wine tasting later." And they have some news reporter that's up. Oh my God! Actually, you know what? Look it up. I can't believe you didn't see it. It's worth it. Just quickly look up news reporter crushing grapes. I'm telling you. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I think I have seen that, actually.
Yes, where she falls out of the bucket.
Yeah.
This is it.
What kind of grapes? These are filled with Chamberson grapes.
Yeah, they're like on a platform.
Yes.
And they have a bunch of grapes. She's in there. That's gross. Crushing them with your feet.
Vineyard tours, seminars, arts and crafts. It's a lot of fun. A whole day. Uh-oh. Stop. Oh,
oh. Oh, she just fell like 5 feet.
The best part's not coming yet.
She like knocked the wind out of
her.
Wait.
Oh, no. She's actually hurt.
No,
I go back to the anchors who were like, "Ooh, that's gotta hurt."
That's the best part because they are.
We're gonna.
If you see the two anchors, they're both like attractive, polished.
The cameraman does not show her on the ground. He's showing like the estate in the background.
I love it. I love it. But
how does he not train the camera on her?
That's one of the.
No, I think she's actually hurt.
No, I think she is.
Yeah,
she's
hurt.
I love it.
Hard fall off there.
I love it because they're all so perfect. They're all so polished. Then they cut back to them being perfect and polished, but something's gone radically wrong, and all they can get out is, oh, that looks like
ow,
that.
Ow, stop.
Please stop.
I can't breathe. Stop.
Oh, my God, dude.
That's great.
Hard fall.
Oh, that's one of the best ones.
Oh, my hard fall. Oh, man. Oh. Getting the wind knocked out of you. That does smart.
And then the other one, there's another one. You have to bring it up if you want to. But another classic is it's kind of probably like down in like South Carolina or something. They have a woman and she's on an ATV. And she's doing the same kind of thing. Like, come on out this Saturday. It's the country fair in Greensboro. And you can come out and you can ride a tractor. You can ride a motorcycle. I'm riding this ATV. In fact, I'm just going to ride on out of here. Oh, you know, they always have to do like that clever outro. Like, you know, I'm gone fishing. And then they'll like throw the reel and then they're supposed to cut. And it's supposed to be very clever. And this woman's like, and I'm going to ride on out of here. And she guns the ATV.
Oh, Jesus.
Like she nails the throttle. And the thing takes off, but she can't stop it. And she is literally like, she's like the Bigfoot or something, that big monster truck, just piling over bales of hay.
Really?
And, oh, it's
she's
awesome.
Dragging behind
and
it?
And she doesn't know, again, but she's still hanging on to it because she doesn't know how to stop it, but you certainly don't want to let go of something that's going that fast. She's just trying to ride it out, but she doesn't know what to do. Oh, it's the best. I can watch news bloopers all day. I love it. There's really nothing that makes me happier.
Yeah, it is your favorite thing to do. Like that, like whenever you're having a bad day, you do that, don't you?
Oh, because pure escape. Pure escapism.
Yeah, this is my favorite of all time. Serene Branson after the Grammys in 2011 out in Los Angeles.
Serene Branson is live at the stage.
Absolutely my favorite.
Highlights and backstage coverage.
So hot.
For the very
look at how hot she is.
Well, a very, very heavy rotation tonight. We had a very Darrison, let's go to Terry's and look for the bit. They had the pit.
What? She had some, there was some type of aneurysm stroke that was very temporary. She recovered.
That's what they said.
I remember that.
That's what some say.
That she recovered from it and she's fine now. Now, I do have a certain amount of sympathy, like the terror that must go through your mind when you go through it. But I know that you love it because whenever anything goes wrong, you just start quoting heavy, heavy bertation.
Yeah, hell, man, that was a heavy, heavy bertation. No question about it. No question. She's so hot.
Well, a very, very heavy, heavy bertation tonight. We had a very Darrison bite. Let's go to Terrace those for the bit. They have the pit.
Dude, I have totally talked like that, like on the loop, man, in the middle of the night. I absolutely have done that.
Now, and you know there's got to be people out there that are like, that's a sign of mind control and controlling
the
media.
They do say that that is like MK Ultra glitches.
That was MK Ultra at its baddest.
But she does look, she looks panicked. Her eyes are like, oh my God, something's going on and I don't know how to stop it.
At the end, yes. At the end, yeah, which is... The last couple words where she's just like muttering off like parja, parja, parja.
Yeah, that's the only part where I go like, oh, I do kind of feel sorry for, you know, making fun of this woman's stroke.
Yes, but it was temporary. Like, I'm not one who laughs. I don't laugh when old people fall. I don't really have that big Schadenfreude vibe. But when it comes to the news where it's supposed to be so polished, it's really hard to fight. You know, the other thing I have to say, and this is the uglier side of me. Have you seen any videos recently of people who are on K2, that synthetic marijuana, where they turn into zombies?
Oh, totally.
Dude, I can watch those people on K2 all day. And the way they're able to lean over and not fall, like, it almost seems like it empowers their core and, like, their posterior chain. Because it's like, how are they standing? Like, they're zapped, leaning to the side.
Yeah.
And yet they're still able to maintain. It's remarkable.
Yeah, those are scary videos. You got to show those to your kids, I think.
Yes, but I found myself enjoying those.
You really?
Yes.
That is Schadenfreude right there,
dude. Yeah, it's just like, I don't want to laugh at drug addiction, but man, to have a posterior chain like that, I'm a little envious.
A posterior chain like that.
But you could just maintain and hold yourself?
Yeah, no question, That's what they want us all to be. They want us all to be buzzed out zombies.
I just want the core strength of a drug addict.